Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Lookout Landing Prospects Focus Podcast. I am your host, John Troopin, and I'm joined today once again by staff writer Joe Doyle. Joe, how are you?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
We're doing all right. We're not yet stir crazy, although getting close. Well, that's fair. And managing editor Kate Prusser, who is apparently sort of slipping away from sanity just a tad. Kate, how are you holding up over there in West Seattle?
Not great, John. I'm not gonna lie. The Rona had me in the first half,
and it also
had me in the second half, and for all foreseeable halves.
As a group, we stand for outside. The idea of outside.
Yeah, the one thing I would say is I can't wait. I'm gonna be so grateful for the stupidest stuff, like the annoyance of running errands. I'm gonna love it. Yep. Like,
this is really just conditioning us for our prison time that we're gonna do in the future.
Are you kidding me? This is prison.
That's what I'm saying. You're gonna be all ready to go.
Prison's gonna be a cake. At least in prison I would get to talk to people. This is just like literally me having increasingly intricate discussions with my cats.
Well, we're glad to give you a break from the cats, the cat only content, I suppose. We're here to talk Mariners' top prospect list. Thank you, everyone who has hopped on so far. We've talked through 50 through 30. We talked through 30 through 21. Today, we are going to talk through 20 through 11. Another 10 names. Another 10 prospects. Obviously, again, the baseball season's just all kinds of jacked up at the moment. So it's hard to say how that's going to impact the guys that are on this list. Just development in general. The world. Things of that nature. But as much as possible, we're going to talk about why these guys ended up on the list, the spots that they did, and what hopefully we'll see from them going forward in as little or as much baseball as we get from them in 2020 and beyond. So to start off, we're actually going to jam five guys. We're going to jam half the list into sort of one group here, which, you know, as you get closer to the top of the list, you get more and more refinement. You get people who are standing out more. I would say 16 through 30 on this list, honestly, you could probably not fully interchange, but certainly there's a lot of people who I think could shift a fair bit. But for the top 15, you know, there's a lot more sort of stratification. So starting with number 20 here, we've got third baseman Austin Shenton, number 19, left-handed reliever Aaron Fletcher. 18 is righty reliever Art Warren. 17, righty reliever Sam Delaplane. And number 16 is outfielder Braden Bishop. So three relievers, sort of the highest any reliever gets on this list. Obviously reliever heavy in the previous episode, as well as a couple position players here. And, you know, last episode we talked a lot about Joe Rizzo, who is ostensibly, you know, the highest rated, well, the highest level third base prospect in the system. You know, you've got Jake Schiener and you've got sort of some minor league free agents at higher levels who could potentially make some play. But Rizzo's been a guy who's been talked about. Shenton, 2019 draftee, great bat. What for you guys would put or has put Shenton slightly ahead of Rizzo on this list? And do we think he is a contender to actually be a third baseman long term?
So for me, I think Shenton is going to have to be a third baseman. And the reason I say that, I got to watch him in three or four games at Everett this year, and he's a strong kid for his size. He's very well built, but he doesn't move laterally very well at all. It's just not something that is part of his game. So when I honestly, I think Shenton reminds me a little bit of the 30-year-old version of Kyle Seager, where he doesn't have a great arm. He doesn't move to his left or to his right all that well, but
two of the most important directions.
Yeah, two of the most important directions. But I don't think he has the range to play second base, maybe first base, I guess. But he'd have to show a little bit more pop in the bat to play first base at the big league level for a successful team. So, yeah, I think he ends up at third base, and he's probably a slightly more hit-oriented player than he is power, but a full year in Modesto, or, you know, 250 at-bats in Modesto will probably give us a better idea.
Yeah, I think that why he's ahead of Rizzo here is mostly it's just promise and potential. Like, we haven't seen him yet, so I think there's a lot of excitement about the upside. What he's shown so far that Rizzo has not. I think, John, you said once that if you could mush the two of them together, you'd get, like, pretty much a really good, solid third base prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we were talking about that with Honeyman. Because, like, if you could somehow also, yeah, if you could also mash Honeyman in there, my God.
Honeyman and either of them would be magnificent.
Yeah, you'd have, yeah, exactly. You'd have,
they are, like, similar players.
Yeah.
That would be like a top 20 prospect, right? Because the bat is really exciting, and I think that is just because power tends to be a little bit louder tool in prospect rankings. I think the fact that Shenton has shown that, and shown that at a greater degree at the same level than Rizzo did when he was at those levels. Mm-hmm. Of course, Rizzo was playing in like the absolute howling windstorms of the Midwest League. So,
yeah.
Shenton was a child. Yeah, he was a literal child. So, I mean, I can see an argument for both of them. Honestly, I'm excited to watch both of them play this year. But, and I think Shenton might be getting a little bit more attention than he would have in a weaker draft class, or a stronger draft class, first of all, because the 2019 draft class sucked. I mean, it was
not well regarded.
It was not an exciting draft class. And it was not an exciting draft class for position players. And the Mariners took a gazillion college arms. So he really stands out as one of the very few position players. So I think just like, because he's kind of a rara avis as far as the draft goes, his positioning within this particular system, he's getting a little more. And because he's a local kid, he's got a great personality. Like, all these things, I think, are kind of contributing to him maybe getting more buzz than, say, like a Bobby Honeyman would.
Yeah, I, if I'm not mistaken, there were only two non-pitchers taken in the first 10 rounds by the Mariners. It was Shenton in the fifth and classic senior sign shortstop Mike Salvatore.
Ah, yes. Mike Salvatore. Exactly. I'm sorry, you have to say it. You have to say it like that.
That's true. You gotta give a little bit of enthusiasm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there that, like, you know, if he'd been acquired in a different way, he would not necessarily be as well, or at least not as prominently discussed. But yeah, I do think, you know, when you can hit for reasonable contact and you can hit for reasonable power, you know, I saw Shenton at West Virginia for a couple games at Lakewood, and the only, you know, it was sort of, you had Julio Rodriguez just absolutely sting the ball, and you had Austin Shenton sting the ball as well, and there were no other people sort of in the lineup just like making contact in the same way that those two did.
West Virginia was rough last year hitting wise.
So, you know, obviously they've been playing Shenton a little bit in left field, sort of preparing him for that. But I do think it would make a huge difference if he could stick in the infield, just because, you know, it takes so much pressure off of his bat if he can continue playing third. And the reps are going to be there every day in the Mariners system at third base right now, as opposed to in the outfield where they have a lot of guys who would be splitting those options for. Okay, well, let's... what about Braden Bishop, who I think has spent parts of the last couple years in the middle or even the, you know, the back or even the middle of the sort of top 10 list for the Mariners, which I think is as indicative a lesson as any on the variability of what a top 10 prospect in a system can look like. You know, obviously Bishop is someone who has a lot of positive characteristics, but you know, there is a reason he was not necessarily viewed as a center fielder of the future sort of type guy. And he's had both a pretty underwhelming and incredibly unlucky sort of year and a half here, maybe 2 years even. And the club actually sort of sent him down to the minors even before spring training was suspended, because he just hasn't looked quite the same since ruptured spleen, I believe it was.
Yeah, lacerated. Even before that.
Lacerated spleen.
He broke his arm or broke his wrist.
He
was the best hitter in Tacoma by a margin when he broke his wrist, and everyone was so excited to see him in Seattle. He was like 2 weeks away from 40-man call-ups, and then it was over. So I don't know.
Wasn't he in?
I think he was still in Arkansas in 2018, but he was absolutely going to be a call-up regardless because he was hitting really well. The type of contact he was making was, you know, line drive with, you know, not significant power, but power to, you know, keep people honest. And, you know, obviously the defense and the speed and the base running is there. You know, what, I mean, is there really a route to playing time and to sort of big league success still there for Braden Bishop?
I want to pop in and say, like, Braden Bishop's 2019. I don't think is reflective at all of the player that he is. There are too many factors clouding it that I think you can't really get a great picture on things. Like, he didn't think he was going to make the roster at all. He was kind of like a very late addition to the 40-man. Finds out he's going to Japan. This is a huge deal. He has to go in and be Ichiro's defensive sub. Like, he's the one who replaced Ichiro in his final game ever. I mean, it's just, it, and then the, you have the lacerated spleen and just kind of all the general stuff a guy goes through. I do really want to, like, remember who Brayden was in AA, in Dickie Stevens, which we know is a difficult park for right-handed hitters. He was hitting the ball with authority there. And, you know, mm-hmm. so I think he just hasn't gotten his footing. And I don't know how high the ceiling is, because obviously, like, the, I don't know how much the power is going to be able to show up against major league pitching. But I think he's going to have, whenever they get back to play, a significantly better. I don't know if there's anyone, just because the bar is starting so low, he is going to surprise some people this year, I think. That's my hot take on Brayden Bishop.
I think, I mean, I definitely think that's possible. As far as the prospect side of things go, you could still make a reasonable case based on the skill set that he's a top 10 prospect in the organization. The problem is, in July, he turns 27. Yeah. I mean, he's old for prospect circles. And frankly, if we were going off of some other parameters that other publications use, Brayden Bishop isn't technically a prospect anymore. But for this exercise, you know, he's going to get a ton of playing time in Seattle this year, and he's going to get another opportunity to hit. The thing that's so intriguing about Brayden is the floor is so high when you play such excellent defense. When you go out and patrol center field, it doesn't matter if you go out and hit 107. You still have the ability to make a positive impact on the team. And, you know, one last thing I would add on the guy, it's not like his 2019 was a complete wash. He still went down to Tacoma and hit like 280, and he hit 8 home runs.
He had a 2. Mm. I was just looking up. He had a 211 ISO mark in AAA, which
he looked all right.
He looked fine. The problem was they just wanted to get him right. I could still see him coming up, and you know, all the guy has to do is hit 240. Just find a way to hit 240. You can run into 3 home runs, hit 240, and play 70 grade defense. And as a prospect, you're going to be held in high regard because of what you can undoubtedly add to a team as a floor. Yeah. So, you know, I am looking forward to seeing him getting more at-bats.
Yeah. It's, excuse me, it's tricky for him just because there's such a narrow sort of pathway because of how many people there are in the outfield. But, you know, 240, I mean, you know, a lesser version of Kevin Pillar essentially is what, or, you know, something approaching Kevin Pillar is what people thought, well, maybe this is what he can work out. You know, Kevin Pillar is a guy who's hit like 250 to 270 his whole career and has been a fabulous base runner and has been extraordinary defensively. Like, if Bishop is what, 90% of that, you know, 80 to 90% of that, like, you know, that is still a big league career that can last for quite a while. I worry that he's not going to have the opportunity, and especially in a shortened season like this because of his age. You know, that window, and not that he's not going to get a chance to play summer. Like, John Andreoli keeps getting shots. And like, you know, like, this type of player continues to get looks. It just is. It would be nice, obviously, to see someone who has been with the organization their whole career, who was there when there was no one else, realistically, to get that shot here. And I don't know if that long-term is going to be the case or not, but we'll see.
Yeah, the shortened season really hurts him because Haniger's injury paved the way for a lot of playing time for all of these guys. So.
Right, right. And yeah, I mean, there's not going to be.
If I was Malik Smith, I would watch out.
Yeah.
I mean, all Malik has to do is come in and not be a knucklehead in center field.
Right.
You know, yeah,
it'll look like second half of the.
Oh, I mean, Malik Smith should watch out for like sabotage.
gotcha.
He is the thing standing in the way to Brayden Bishop getting regular.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, on the other hand,
Brayden would never do that. He's a very nice guy. But
You could watch out for a haircut, though.
Say that. Whoa.
No, I'm saying that because Braden is a barber. He's the clubhouse barber.
That's true.
I hear also Devin Sweet, so I really some content that I'm really sad pitchers I'm missing
and, you
out
know, pitchers on. Pitchers and position players don't really overlap, right? You got to each have your own barber.
I don't know. Sweet does like Sweet does Julio. And, you know, if that's, Julio is willing to let...
That's the Wild West.
No.
They're
no,
taking
no.
what they can afford.
No. Come on. This is Julio. Like, Julio is... No. I think that's Sweet fine. Has a... Sweet has
only,
a certain...
Only Tucson's finest.
Sweet has a certain clientele that maybe Bishop doesn't have, is what I'm saying.
That's fair.
There's room for both of them.
That's fair. Okay. Well, we got a few relievers here as well. Aaron Fletcher, the lefty. Art Warren... sort of an older righty with touching triple digits velo, and Sam Delaplane, who no one can really totally figure out why it works, but it does. Between these three, who do you think has the best single pitch?
Every time I see these rankings, I want to shake them. Like, I want to just get in there and move them around because... Mm-hmm. Like we were talking about with Joey Garber, like he could definitely be part of this conversation too. There's just a clump of relievers. Understand there's a clump of relievers.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that's sort of what I was talking about with like the 16 to 30. There's a lot of variability. The higher you get, the less sort of.
And honestly, if we would have done these rankings just a month later than we did as a staff, you probably would see quite a bit of shifting just among the arms because we've now seen. You know, a month of spring training games where there's tangible results that you can look at. So,
and I mean, you can't make any determinations off spring training, but Sam Delaplane, who just I would have said prior to this exercise or prior to spring training, I've been like, oh, it's Delaplane's, you know, call it what you want, slurve, slider, curveball, whatever it is, his out pitch. That just completely befuddled, you know, it had like a 60% swinging strike rate or something. I would have said that pitch, but having watched all these guys pitch at different times, I might say Joey Gerber's fastball now.
Interesting. All right. Well, I appreciate you cheating and dodging the question, but that's very fair. You know, I love thinking outside the bun.
I mean, sort of, you know, mentality. There's an argument to be made for Art Warren's curveball. Like, unfortunately, he had a real tough time commanding it in sort of a short...
No, that's fair. That's fair.
I'm going to say Max Scherzer's...
Shut up! And Aaron Fletcher's slider is
okay,
also...
Okay, well, you picked one off the list, and now you're picking several.
I'm going to say, like...
You're just...
Like, all of these
You're making
things,
a mockery, Kate.
Listen, all of these... Each of them has a really, really good plus pitch.
Right.
And we saw it, unfortunately, kind of two different... I saw Fletcher really struggle with command in a couple of his spring training outings. Like, you know, that is the nature of relievers, kind of. It's a bad question, is what I'm saying, John.
All right. Well, I was thinking you would have one you like. Joe might have one
I have one I like.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I'll stand by. I think he had trouble. He had. You saw some real like welcome to the bigs moments with Delaplane this spring training, but I am still a big believer that he will figure it out and that slurve, slider, curveball pitch is just guys can't touch it. So.
Well, my vote would be. Braden Bishop's crow hop.
All right, you're
no,
all
I'm kidding.
Cut
so,
off.
If I had to give my, I have a bit of a hot take. I
you
think
you do have to give. I
do. So, I've talked to a lot of scouts that have watched these guys, and I'm gonna say Aaron Fletcher's changeup. How's that for a
interesting? Tell me more.
So I talked to. Three different people. One of them is a player. Two of them are professional scouts. And everyone does rave about the two-seam slider combo that Fletcher has. But last year, the changeup took a huge, huge step forward. And I've heard some guys say it's a 55 pitch, and I know 55 is not a rating, but as it stands, it was a 50 changeup, and now people are saying it could be a 50 plus, maybe up to a 60 by this time this year. So when you can mix in a good changeup down and in on lefties or out and away on righties with that slider and two seam, I think that can really turn Aaron Fletcher into a, you know, kind of put him up into that Joey Gerber conversation for ceiling for a reliever. Obviously, totally different players with their pitch mix and what they bring to the team. But if Aaron Fletcher can find the command that Kate was talking about with the fastball and with the slider, because I was talking to Sam Delaplane, and Sam was like, Aaron Fletcher can't throw a baseball straight. It's impossible to play catch with him because he didn't know it and knows where it's going. So I don't know if he can hone it in. He could turn into a nice piece for
an extra Mariners. Pitch would also give him. I feel like you could really maybe start to look at him as a multi-inning reliever too.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Which would be super valuable.
And he has that. I mean, he's like the only guy in the organization that I can think of that he's given up one home run in his career. In his entire minor league career.
Excuse me, Jack Anderson would like to have a conversation.
Has
with
Jack
you.
Done that too?
Jack has given up one. And it was this spring training, and he looked so baffled by it. Poor Jack Anderson could also be on this list, right? Like, he's also part of that reliever clump. Never gave up a long ball in the minors, and that streak came to an end this spring training.
That's the Shea Simmons Award.
Yes.
Hadn't given up a homer, and then...
R.I.P.
God, I loved Shea Simmons.
I know you did. I'm so sorry.
Oh, heartbreaking. Man, that's okay.
John loved Alex Jackson too.
I felt okay about Alex Jackson. I could take it or leave it.
I love Out of the Park a lot, but they have Alex Jackson rated the same as Shea Langeliers in the Brave system, and I just feel like
that sounds like someone, you need to fire your scouting director.
Someone needs to take a look at that.
Sorry, fictional Scott Hunter.
We need a new scouting director. Maybe I should.
I think just from what I've seen, I do have to go with Delaplane slider curveball as well.
That's a pitch that needs a name, don't you think? We need to come up with a nickname for
that.
Let's
call it the last hurrah.
I think the thing for him is just that, you know, Who's the guy? The Cleveland reliever, James Karinchak? I think that Delaplane has a little bit of that going for him, where it's like the fastball is, you know, not blow you away fast. It's not really remarkable, but
it's below. It's like 89-90. Right. It is
I believe Karinchak has a little more velo than that, but like, there's essentially just like, it's the perfect like efficiency, spin efficiency pitch in terms of like, the fastball is almost perfect backspin, and the sort of breaking ball has almost perfect topspin, and so yeah, Karinchak throws 97 and his curve is like 84, so that you know, that's why he is going to be an incredible reliever most likely. But Delaplane, you know, even with a lesser version of that, essentially has like a fastball and a curveball that look mostly the same for most of the way to the plate, and because of that, both pitches play up, you know. So it's not exactly one pitch, but the you know, they work in tandem really nicely, and his delivery aids that even further. So he has less sort of room for error because of his velocity, but because of how he executes pretty consistently, I think he's got sort of the nicest combo there.
I think with Delaplane, you hit the nail on the head. The delivery is very deceptive, and he plays that fastball. I heard that he was 93-94 at Gas Camp this year, which would be good because that's a couple ticks above where he was last year. And if he can average 90, you know, high 92s, 93 for the entire season, he's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. But against lefties, when he can throw that fastball and really dot it in the upper right-hand corner of the strike zone and play that curveball at their back foot, mm-hmm. it's a pretty loopy slurve. So it does tunnel really well with a fastball high and away. And then you've seen him handcuff and sword some right-handers with that high fastball as well. So he's not a very tall guy. He creates a really good plane, no pun intended.
of the plane? So, you mean of the plane. He creates a Sam yeah. of the plane?
That's right. Yeah, joke. Yeah, this quarantine is going fine. So no, that fastball.
Must credit. Must credit Keith Law.
Yeah. So, anyways,
or not.
Let's just see. Let's see what happens with him this year. You just can't ignore the numbers. The numbers are just they're almost unbelievable when you watch the guy pitch.
The best of a qualified pitcher, I guess. The best strikeout to walk ratio in all of. Mm-hmm. Minor league baseball, well, I guess that, all of baseball, but you know,
yeah,
minor league baseball since it's harder at the big league level. Yeah,
I think it's one of the top three. I want to say it's one of the top three or four Ks per nine as well in all of minor league baseball.
It was like 17 or 18, right? Like
it's it was very, ludicrous, very high. Yeah,
you know? I mean, because that was part of the thing was like, right? You know, he and LJ Newsome sort of both had this fabulous sort of start, but then it was like, oh well, you know, then they moved up, you know, into double A, but then Delaplane just continued to be absolutely bonkers. It was around 15 or 16 K per nine, and you know, and Delaplane wasn't even having great results in high A. He just was obviously dominating and getting a little unlucky, and then in double A sort of had the opposite end of the spectrum. But like, yeah, it is extraordinary stuff. So I'm curious to see how that continues to play up. Okay, well let's go to our next group here. We've officially made it past reliever land, and moving into a trio of guys who, at least for now, can consider them all themselves all starting pitchers. We've got number 15 on our rankings, ready starter Isaiah Campbell, 2019 draftee. Number 14 on the list, right-handed pitcher Sam Carlson. And then number 13, right-handed pitcher traded away and back again for Edwin Encarnacion. Juan Thin, three pretty distinct profiles, really, but all sort of lining up nicely. Who for you guys, Joe, I want to hear from you first, and then Kate, who of this trio is most exciting to you personally?
Okay, so I'm going to cheat like Kate and have two answers.
The both of you. I can't trust you for a minute.
I'm just going to have two.
I'm not a cheater.
There's three of us. I could each pick one.
Okay, fine.
Fine.
All right,
no,
I'll pick
no,
one.
No,
I'll pick one.
Deny.
I'll pick one for the exercise. I'm going to say Sam Carlson is the most intriguing for me because he fits the profile of what a big league physical starting pitcher should look like. He's a big, tall, 6'4", lanky, you know, hard throwing righty that has a 3-pitch mix already. I mean, granted, he hasn't thrown a baseball with any purpose for 2 years, but plus changeup, above average changeup. He's still got 94 reportedly from what I was hearing at spring training. He's still throwing the ball 93-94 in Peoria. And he's got a very good slider curveball that they kind of meld together. It's not a perfect pitch yet. It's probably still a below average offering. But still, I want to say he turns 21 this year, or he just turned 21. You got to be patient with him. It's going to be a couple of years. He's probably not going to see the big leagues until the end of 2022 at this point. But if there's anybody on this list, and that's with the outlier that Campbell's a giant unknown right now, if there's anybody on this list that I think has the best chance of sticking in a rotation and ultimately being a starting pitcher for the Seattle Mariners, it's probably going to be Sam Carlson, as long as he stays healthy.
Interesting. Yeah, he turned 21 this winter, so yeah, he's still quite young. I think the tricky thing for him, obviously, is because he's essentially missed 2 years or a year and a half now, 2 years pretty much guaranteed. He's got sort of a shortened developmental cycle in a sense, mm-hmm. Because he's going to be Rule 5 eligible next winter, not this coming winter, but you know, December of 2021. And he's thrown three innings. You know, he's sort of got to make at least a little bit of a step. And you know, if he's unable to pitch well, then he's not going to get picked. But that sort of, this is the type of thing that teams run into with young pitchers who get hurt or have slow development, is that they are in danger of losing those guys to other teams. And so Carlson's development, I guess, that the team needs him to be successful more rapidly than he may be able to be. And that they may, that may be a tricky thing there. Kate, you actually got a chance to talk to Sam Carlson a bit. I know you're working on sort of writing that up and sort of finding the right time now that baseball is sort of all out of whack. But
I know. I feel so bad at
what was his sort of mentality like when you talked to him?
He's a great kid. Like, he has, I think, maybe not, has had a life where he's had a pretty good time of things. Like, he looks, and I cannot emphasize this enough, like if the CW was casting a high school show, uh-huh. and they needed, like, the baseball star who's going to get drafted, and I don't know, maybe he, like, falls in with some people who are trying to get him to do roids or something. I don't know, whatever the plot line would be. But he just has the look. Like, he's looks, got
the California looks, right?
He's from, for a boy from Minnesota. Know,
Midwest,
yeah.
Kid. Minnesota, yeah.
No, he's got, like, super kind of that all-American just... But he looks... I mean, he's got the size and strength to be a starting pitcher. And I think, like, he just maybe hasn't... He hasn't gone through it yet, or he hadn't gone through it really until his elbow blew out on him.
Until the teach, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. it was a journey, and I mean, I've heard players talk about it before, and what a journey it is, how much you learn about yourself. Because you're basically, like, the thing you love most in the world gets taken away from you, and you...
And the thing you spend most of your time doing.
Yes, you know? Your career prospects, maybe the thing that your family is depending on you to do. A huge piece of your identity, like an enormous... And of course, you know, we know how mental issues are treated in the MLB, which is... They are not. So you don't get any kind of support on that side of the journey unless you go seek it out yourself. So it's a really challenging journey back, and I think it's great how Sam just inserted himself into the process. He really embraced everything the Mariners were telling him. He took it as a chance to really grow personally and, in developing, like, what he could develop, controlling what he could control. He went back to school, which his mom had always wanted him to do. So it was like a way to kind of take a pathway that he'd thought had been closed off to him. It's a really interesting interview, and I swear I will write it up. Sure. I had it written last year, and then he just kind of didn't pitch. And now he must feel so... Because this was like the spring training where he was going to get back and get after it. And I think he was really excited to play in front of fans, even on the backfields. Mm-hmm. And... Mm-hmm. Now the Rona has stolen his. He must feel so snake bit. I feel so bad for that kid.
He was working with. He sort of got close with a couple, uh, a couple other people who had done Tommy John, right? Yes. Brian Paul.
Brian Paul was
Michigan,
like
University of Michigan. Guy,
Brian Paul reliever. Was kind of his Sherpa.
Max Roberts also, he, right?
And was, I think Max Max was either just ahead or just behind. I can't remember.
I think just ahead.
So those guys really reached out and kind of showed him the way to be. And then he, in turn, has been reaching out to guys like Michael Limoncelli and Blake Townsend, who's an Australian pitcher that we signed in free agency, who have both had to go through the Teage. And so he's now like made himself into the next link on that chain as a resource for those guys to reach out to. So I think that's pretty cool. But yeah, sure would like to see him pitch.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm sure he would like to.
Absolutely. Would you say Carlson is also sort of the most exciting one for you? Or
I don't want to take yours, and I feel like you're going to say... I feel like I know what you're going to say, so I should
We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
You're going to say one then.
No, I was going to say Isaiah Campbell.
So you were! All right, yeah, I'll take 10 then. I'll take him. Please. Who I was not, like, ever all that excited about personally, but...
Yeah, it's been a slow burn.
It has been. And now I think, like, I like him a lot as a person. I think he's got a real drive and hunger.
He wants to kind of be out there.
He is. He's got a little bit of that Stroman, like, chip on his shoulder, height doesn't measure heart kind of thing. So I like
that.
It's
not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog.
I know. Just look over. We're just going to start translating Marcus Stroman's various tweets into Spanish now. He's put on a ton of good weight. He's listed at 155 most places. He's closer to like 200 now. When I talked to Freddy Batista, who is one of my favorites in the organization, he's a catcher, a really solid kid. He's a typical catcher, you know, big time leader. Is interesting because he spent a lot of time in the DSL and kind of here. They're grooming him maybe to be kind of an org catcher. I'm not sure. They definitely like him, and he was giving me some scouting reports on players at spring training, and I said, who should I watch out for? Like, who is the most improved? Who is everyone going to be talking about? And he said, Wonten. He said up at 97, 98. So that would be very exciting, because I think some of the reports we have are like 94, 95. Freudy says higher than that. So.
I've heard that from some coaches within the organization that at Gas Camp, he was 97, 98. So I can definitely check that out.
I am really, really bummed that I did not get to see him throw at spring training, because I was looking for him.
Well,
and I was
going
to try
young.
To...
Like, he's 20. February.
Yeah.
Like super, super young. So
He's 20 in the same way Julio is 19. Like, it just happened.
Yeah.
So he is, I will go ahead, and you know, I stand a short king, so. Mm-hmm.
You love.
I will go ahead and throw my enthusiasm behind 110.
Sure. Okay, well, I'll take up the mantle on Isaiah Campbell.
This is such a surprising reversal for us, because I was the high one on Campbell when he got drafted. He was one of my pre-draft, for the first time ever, I literally screamed when his name was announced. I was so excited the Mariners picked him. So this is a little bit of an interesting reversal for us, John.
Well, I mean, it was part of the thing that was fun was the Mariners have had some good drafts, some bad drafts. What they haven't really had in a long time is a draft where they took a fairly high profile player. At least in terms of a player who...
That is true. They've had a bunch where, like, the MLB analysts are sitting there at the desk like, Wyatt Mills?
right. You know, or at least, you know, like, people were like, you know, people knew who Evan White was. Evan White was on, you know, in top 15s, in top 20s, of course. But also, like, Kentucky wasn't amazing. You know, you weren't seeing Kentucky play, you know, although deep into the college. I went back and looked. The Mariners, I don't remember when the last one was, but it is not out of the question that it was all the way back to Dustin Ackley and Kyle Seager when the Mariners had a first round pick that was playing in the College
in
World
the College
Series.
World Series. Wow.
Where was Until Zunino? Campbell.
Was oh yeah Zunino Florida would have been. Yes Zunino Zunino would have been yeah. And
I think it'd be Zunino
yeah yes I think you're right yeah so Zunino was there but you know but that was a big part of it right like people knew who Mike Zunino was even before he was a member of the Mariners
and Isaiah White Campbell, I mean it's fair to say too White was not a sexy pick he was like
no
strong defense I mean he was about as
we were
boring
we were
as we were I'm so sorry Evan I've seen no, the I error mean, in my know, ways but
the,
yeah
no,
no.
Well, but like this was the you know the reason you pick someone like Evan White is because there's a very high likelihood he is a major
yes.
league player and he is a major league player because you know like
but so the flavor is overwhelmingly vanilla
exactly and so it was cool at a baseline level of just enthusiasm watching, you know, for an entertainment angle to see, you know, oh, this guy was picked by the Mariners and he is pitching Friday night, you know, in the biggest game of his life in the College World Series and absolutely just crushed it for Arkansas. You know,
it's like a tiny little sliver of what the Kumar Rocker experience might be if you knew that you were getting Kumar.
Exactly. So Campbell, you know, there's sort of a lot of uncertainty in particular because he sort of took the Logan Gilbert route and did not pitch in 2019 after being drafted. Arkansas, obviously, as we just mentioned, went into the College World Series. He was leaned on pretty heavily as one of their best pitchers. And so the Mariners essentially said, we're not going to have you throw. We're going to just have you sort of...
He was with the team, which is different from Logan Gilbert. Logan Gilbert was totally isolated because of the mono
he had
and
mono,
the surgery.
You know,
but
he was
Campbell,
you know, partying too hard.
Campbell made these connections with like Brandon Williamson and Kuhn and some of the other like guys that we drafted. Yeah. So they were all hanging out together up in Everett. They went on like day trips to Victoria together, which is adorable. Right. They rode ferries. I mean, come on. That's the experience every Mariners prospect drafted out of college should have. They should all get to go to Everett, hang out, and like do tourism of the upper left of the country. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know, get a sort of real good read on what we got going.
Hey, it sold Evan White. I mean, that's why he signed his extension.
It's true.
Reportedly.
Yeah, so, you know, Campbell, the sort of exciting thing with Campbell, he has four pitches that could very feasibly track all the way to the bigs. He's got enough pitches that are, sort of feasible that you can still see a starter there, that you don't really have to worry about bullpen, future initially, which is a nice thing to see. He's big, you know, he's 6'4", 220, 225. Very invested.
He's a large lad.
Yeah, very, very sort of proactive buy-in on sort of advanced training and analytics and you know it's just sort of all the things you would like to see from a modern pitcher.
That Arkansas program does not suck either.
They've
turned out some pretty good players on both sides.
Joe's boy, if I'm not mistaken, who hopefully we could see. Although, you know, well, you know, rough start, but who knows? You know,
brutal start.
Yeah, but you know, the season's over. So
great.
Did it really happen? Did it really
good
happen?
Save.
Was it a
save, John? Well, let me see. Let me take a look at your resume here. Oh, why your last job was only 2 months? Can you explain that? Yeah, I got fired, but I tell you what, the next 8 months would have been rock solid.
All right. Well, you know,
I mean,
maybe Casey can
that.
Pitch himself a little bit. Casey Martin can pitch himself a little bit.
By the way, this is who we're talking about. We're talking about
Casey
Martin.
About Casey Martin, Arkansas shortstop.
Those of you who aren't in the Slack and haven't listened to Joe talk about how much he loves Casey Martin from Arkansas. Oh my
God. That dialogue ended like game one.
Yeah.
So.
That's
because he's still swinging at pitches like he's Vladimir Guerrero. That's so I don't know what to tell you.
I'll just say. With regards to Campbell, he was the person I was probably most excited to see in the system this year. You know, just because when you have a guy who is healthy and they only put the focus on essentially training, you know, physical development and sort of mental skills and planning, like the gap between who they were the last time you saw them and who they are going to be when they come back and you see them next, I think that's really exciting. You know, 22-year-old who probably was going to start in West Virginia, maybe Modesto. I still think that's probably going to be the case. Whenever the season starts. So, you could see him following, not necessarily at the same level as Logan Gilbert, just because Gilbert is so precise with everything he does, and not to say that Campbell's, you know, screwing things up. It's just Gilbert's huge and has been really good, so that's a big ask. But you could see Campbell being sort of that fast moving starter kind of type player, getting grounders with the sinker and you know, using every pitch to make things play up. So I'm curious to see how that grows.
And I think one thing that Campbell has as an advantage over Gilbert is, I think he comes in a little better conditioned because he did pitch so deeply, because he had sort of a heavier workload there, especially there towards the end. Maybe you don't see that slowdown that happened for Gilbert at the end of this year, which was really his first year of professionally pitching with Campbell, who also just has kind of, if you want to understand the scouting term, limited physical projection left, like that is Isaiah. Isaiah Campbell has built out to the edges of his lot.
Yeah.
He has gone up as far as is allowed in the neighborhood covenant. Mm-hmm. Every inch of square footage is accounted for there. So he's not going to be like Gilbert.
But, you know, he's already 91 to 95.
It's just that you're kind of seeing his ceiling cap, and now it's just about maintaining that. Mm-hmm. So again, that could be something that could make him go quickly, honestly.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on to our last two guys here then. We've got two position players, both of whom I think have had really impressive years last year. Starting at the starting at different levels. We've got number 12 outfielder Jake Fraley, who started at AA Arkansas, moved up to Tacoma, and eventually made it to the bigs. And number 11 catcher Cal Raleigh, who started in High A Modesto, absolutely clobbered the ball around town, and moved up to Arkansas. Let's start with Cal Raleigh, who sort of the read on him, switch hitting catcher, very fun.
So we're gonna have dessert. We're gonna have dessert first here.
Well, we're going to do dessert, and then we're going to do sort of aged dessert, and then we're going to do, I don't know, you know, whatever you're kind of feeling. I as someone who likes Fraley a lot, I consider Fraley not the more exciting prospect, but certainly someone exciting.
I know. We can really tell who's driving this pod at this point.
You sure can. more importantly, who's editing the pod? Raleigh, obviously, switch hitting catcher, excellent power both sides of the plate. You know, a little bit of swing and miss for sure, but walks commensurate to his power. Kate, you wrote a sort of two-part series that I thought was actually really fabulous, going in depth on both sides of the game for Cal Raleigh, as well as, you know, looking at the game calling and leadership for Raleigh. Do you think he has the defense to stick at catcher? And Joe, I'd love to hear from you as well.
Yeah, maybe let's let Joe talk, because he hasn't talked in a while, and I will try to edit my comments about Cal Raleigh.
So I really like Cal Raleigh. I think he's going to be a good pro. For me, the only question on Raleigh right now is whether or not he's going to be a big league regular, or if he's going to be you know, a full-time kind of 4-day a week catcher. And I think a lot of that might be dictated by whether or not Seattle decides to spend on a catcher, because they're going to have a lot of money to spend. And if JT Realmuto doesn't get paid soon by the Phillies, I think he's a pretty attractive option after this year. But as far as what the profile brings, he's definitely got a good arm. It's just a matter of the footwork and putting it on the spot. It was a really, really tough year for his arm at Arkansas, but it did show some signs of life at the end of the season. But if we're being honest, Cal Raleigh is going to make his money and he's going to make his impact with his bat. And if he ends up being, I don't know why I've always done this, but I've always likened his profile to Jared Saltalamacchia. And I can't really put my finger on why, just because he's a big imposing force at the plate who swings at the first pitch and hits tanks all the time. And so, I mean, if he could come up and, you know, hit 240 with 25 home runs, it doesn't take much to get you into the conversation of being one of the better catchers in the league. And that's probably a top 10 catcher in the league, if we're being honest. 240 and 25 home runs. Like, yeah. Zunino was hitting 25 home runs batting 210, and I know the defense was far more advanced, but there were people that thought he was a top 6-7 catcher in the league. So yeah, I really like the profile. I think he's gonna be great.
I think so. Are you assuming that he is sticking at catcher?
Yeah, I mean, he's good enough to stick at catcher. If he needs two more years of seasoning to get the technique and the footwork down, just so he can, you know, have an arm that plays at the big league level, I think that's fine. There are worse arms in the big leagues right now than what you could find in Cal Raleigh.
I think the arm is a strength, honestly. So I'm going to tip my hand a little, obviously, because I am a big, big Cal Raleigh stan. and just overall, I think I discovered in, like, really digging deeply with him, like, how interested I am in catching overall. Like, I posted a GIF of him from spring training where he nailed a runner at first base, and I just thought it was a great or at second base, trying to steal. I just thought it was a great throw, honestly. It's just a complete rocket. It's exactly on a line. But catching Twitter found it, and I learned so many things that day. So many things from catching Twitter about, like, just looking into stances. I wasn't aware, like, the kind of conversation that has happened between the traditional kind of squat stance and then left knee down, right knee down. The right knee down, one knee down was kind of popularized by actually Tanner Swanson, who has ties to UW in this area and was the catching coordinator for the Minnesota Twins, where he popularized that with Mitch Garver, who obviously was one of the best catchers in the league last year. And now he's taking that to the Yankees, so I'm excited to see what he does with Sanchez. But Tony Arnerich, who is the Mariners catching coordinator, I think is also kind of part of that maybe group of thought leaders, let's put it that way. So he's had Cal down on one knee since last year. The interesting thing is, I haven't seen this in other catchers yet. I've been kind of watching and trying to see if anyone else. So Cal will alternate right knee down, left knee down. And the throw that he made was left knee down, which is what catching Twitter was so excited about. And I think that plays into the fact that he's a switch hitter and it's just easy for him to kind of shift from the right side of his body doing things, the left side of his body doing things, and all of those things to work in harmony together. So that gives you a huge advantage to be able to go down on either knee behind the plate, because that means you can adjust to where the pitch is better. You can adjust to batter handedness. It just kind of gives you a lot of flexibility that going down on just the one knee kind of can take away from behind, from a traditional squat stance. So I think there's a ton of things that Cal Raleigh does that aren't showing yet or aren't being noticed, that are going to really start showing up big. He threw out a better percentage of runners at Modesto than Joey Bart was. He was nailing guys. That fell off in AA because I think it was just overall that was a rough promotion for him. I don't think he was... I mean, it's hard to say. I don't know that he wasn't ready, but it was a challenge level for him. And he was challenged on both sides of the ball. Cal doesn't really get too frustrated or show too much frustration, but he was, I think, frustrated there with just kind of hitting these walls on... It was tough. I mean, it was tough for him in a way that I don't think baseball had been tough for him before, professional baseball. Because he pretty much had a nice time getting through Everett. He stumbled a little in Modesto and then kind of got on track, was like the hottest hitter in the league there. So, yeah, I think Cal Raleigh is overall underrated, but I think his defense might be the most underrated thing about him.
Interesting. Do you think that sort of like the, especially the type of role that the organization is having him in, which really does seem to be like they are leaning into him as a leader. Do you think that will sort of help fast track him almost? Not that they're going to necessarily rush him, but like they've obviously made an effort to put him and Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelnick and all a lot of these guys in sort of a group that they're going to move up together. Do you think that he will be able to, with his on-field play, move up with that group? Or as Joe said, you know, do you think it's potentially likely he takes maybe another year or two until he's sort of, well, not a year or two, 2 years, because 1 year would be pretty quick. You know, do you think it takes him a little longer to get up than the rest of that group?
I mean, I think a huge part of that is just catching. It's really hard to catch.
Yeah.
And he is dealing with, like, although he did play his sophomore year at FSU, he was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of an undisclosed injury. So he hasn't had totally he's durable, but he hasn't had totally uninterrupted development time, I think. And the Mariners have made a lot of changes to him, too, since he was at FSU.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed his throwing motion to be a little more efficient, which I think is sort of almost like that arm slot conversation that we had when Lance Painter had James Paxton drop down to his natural arm slot. They've had Raleigh drop down from an overhead motion into kind of more of a three quarters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just like developmentally, because he's gone through some changes, because catcher is a difficult position, they have fast tracked him from the moment he set foot in the organization. You know, they sent him to Everett. They sent him to a high performance camp. They sent him to a leadership camp. Like, they have sent him everywhere they could possibly send him. They sent him straight to Modesto. He didn't get any time in West Virginia, much to the chagrin of his North Carolina based family. you know, they moved him. They moved him to Arkansas, I thought, pretty quickly, and primarily to be part of that group of the future. I think Cal is the loser in this, in that he just developmentally has a harder job than these other guys do.
Yeah.
And he didn't get to go up and be Logan Gilbert and like crush immediately. He didn't get to be Jared Kelnick and go up and, you know, make this huge noise. He went up and he struggled because his job is hard. It is so hard to be a catcher. And
I agree. I think it's, I'm glad to see him at least get a chance to struggle in the minors a little bit, as opposed to, you know, Mike Zunino, where obviously that's the easy sort of comparison that people are going to draw. But like Mike Zunino was great in the minors, and then I think struggled a little bit, but in AAA, but like got promoted so quickly and did not have the time to succeed, then hit a level where he was failing, make an adjustment.
Yeah.
And develop, you know, I mean, he was in the big leagues where it was so hard to figure things out, that, you know, that's, and maybe he never would have adjusted entirely, but, you know, obviously we saw him become a capable but pretty flawed and inconsistent player in a way that he really could have been more. And hopefully we see that work out a little better, or at least a little more consistently, for Raleigh relative to his potential.
Yeah, I think when we talk about Mike Zanino, I'm surprised we haven't heard more Mike Zanino, Cal Raleigh. Why do you keep saying Raleigh, by the way? It's Raleigh.
I don't know.
It's Raleigh.
Joe, can I get a
ruling here?
Sounds to me like Kate's coming off the top rope.
Yeah, no, I believe you. I'm just, you know, I don't know. Is it Raleigh?
It's Raleigh, yeah, North Carolina.
It's Raleigh.
Yeah, like Raleigh fingers.
Yeah, there you go.
Man, that's weird.
Can you imagine him with that mustache? That would be glorious behind the plate.
Yeah. Oof. That'd be just out the side of the mask and just like through the front of the mask.
I mean, that would be fantastic. I'm looking at Mike Zanino's minor league WRCs just because I was curious. And holy cow, he had a WRC of 233 in 2012 at Short A.
Yeah, he's very, he really, you know, he was better than Everett.
I mean, my God.
When you're probably the best player in the country, yeah, definitely clobbering definitely the better. SEC.
And
you
then
probably
they
don't need
him,
to play in Everett.
They moved him to AA. He had a WRC of 166. And then 2013, he went to AAA, put up a WRC plus of 96, and they were like, to the bigs!
Yeah,
he could not hit a breaking ball in Tacoma.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. So, I just, whenever people, like, that's obviously not a comparison that we're going to make. Raleigh is being given the chance, the gift of struggle in the minors. And you saw it, too. They were running him out as the secondary catcher. We saw some Austin Nola. We saw some Tom Murphy, Austin Nola. We saw a lot of Cal Raleigh getting those third team reps or sometimes even second team, you know, in split squad days. So they're obviously putting him in a position where he's being challenged, but he's also being told, like, you are our future.
We want you
here.
Getting familiar with these people. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And we know you're going to struggle, but we have faith in you. And. Mm-hmm. I think there is not a player on the list who I think is going to be a bigger breakout conversation next year. Oh my God, how did we miss this guy? I mean, I would say maybe Logan Gilbert, just because I think he's so much more majors adjacent. That would be the other argument I could see for this, but I really think people are going to be like, how did we miss Cal Raleigh?
I like it.
Yeah, I definitely, you're spot on. I think the industry is very low on Cal. And I just think I think we're actually appropriately tempering our expectations, putting him outside of the top 10. But I've seen publications that don't have him in the top 25.
Oh,
for
that's
catchers.
Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I think he's definitely a top 15 catching prospect in the game. And that's simply because of the power that he supplies.
Right.
And that's not counting anything else. So, yeah, I think a lot of people are sleeping on
it. It has been really useful too, just because we play with the Giants so often in our minor league systems. It was really interesting to watch Joey Bart and Cal Raleigh develop at the same time in Everett or in the Northwest League and then move on to Modesto, the Cal League, and just kind of watch them. Cal is not as good as Joey Bart. He's not. But Joey Bart is like a top 10. What is Bart ranked? Like, is he's in the top 10.
I don't think he's that high. I think I think he's floating around 18. I can take a look, but no.
I mean, Joey totally Bart, though, saying. Is a legitimate, like, first-round top prospect in the game talent. Mm-hmm. And Cal was keeping pace with him for a while. He did not have the same success in AA that Joey Bart had. But, you know, he is Joey Bart adjacent. Like, he's not in the same league as him, but he's close. He's Joey Bart light, and he's not getting enough credit for that, I think.
So, we've talked about Raleigh a lot, and...
Sorry, obviously, John.
No, that's quite all right. Well,
I'm going to mute myself now and let you...
No,
just let
I, go I think... Probably listeners certainly have at least a little bit more of a sense of Jake Fraley, just because you got to see him at the big league level, and he's been sort of a major force in spring training both last year and this year. So even if you're not, you know, a prospect head, as it were, you probably got a chance to see Fraley and sort of what he's all about. So I don't need to go too in depth on him. Obviously, he got hurt last year and wasn't able to quite perform at the level that people might have hoped in the short big league stint he got. It was like 12, 15 games, something like that. Of these two, do we think we have 0, 1, 2 long-term solutions for a starting position on sort of the next quality Mariners roster? I think we've talked a lot about Raleigh, and I think there's a decent sense that he is going to be one of the guys of the next kind of core, as it were. Do we think they are both good options to be starters or at least major rotation players? Joe, what do you think for that?
I think Fraley is going to surprise the hell out of a lot of people this year, and I think he's going to put up like a 270 batting line, and everyone's going to be stunned, to be honest. I'm really high on Jake Fraley. I don't think on the next contending team, I think he's probably going to be a rotational outfielder that still gets 200 to 300 at bats in a year, but he's going to be one of the better fourth utility outfielders in the game. And then I kind of gave my two cents on Raleigh. I'm somewhere in between him being a full-time catcher and a DH second catcher kind of profile. It just depends on whether or not he can prove to be sufficient behind the plate and not strike out quite so much. So I know this is a bit of a cop out, but I think the answer is somewhere between 0 and 2.
That is the possible answer. So thanks, Joe. Everything you said.
Okay. No more calling me a cheater because I highlighted each reliever's best pitch.
You know, I understand.
That is cheating. That is weaseling. Weasel.
Just morally bankrupt.
I don't like to be wrong.
Weasel.
You know what? Here's what I'll say. It is weaseling. I am someone who does not enjoy the sort of I don't get enthusiasm out of hot takes generally, like hot takes for the
they physically pain me. It pains me to make a hot take.
I do appreciate sort of a measured suggestion, and I when I'm putting these questions out there, I'm trying to get sort of taking a stand. I was taught in sophomore year history and English class, you have to make a thesis statement, and it can't be, this was big, this was important, and also not important. You know, you have to actually take an opinion. So, with that in mind, I do appreciate the measured sort of response, Joe. And you're a coward. That's what it is.
That's fair. I've been called worse.
That's fair.
I don't know. I don't like to, bloat guys up to where it's like, oh yeah, this guy's definitely going to be the center fielder of the future, or this guy's going to be, a switch hitting enigma,
the next
catcher
Matt
that's going to be great.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to blow smoke up anyone. So I think having a measured approach is the way to go with both of these guys, because I think both of them are fringe players, unfortunately. I don't think either one of them screams off the page that they have a higher likelihood of panning out than not. And
that's why they're here.
We're right on the bubble of the top 10.
Right. Kate, where do you stand on these two?
I mean, where I stand, and where I stand is I like Fraley. Like, I think Fraley is... I love his approach towards hitting. I'm a little worried about his health.
Yes.
I have an unfairly bad opinion of him in the outfield, mostly because he can't play left field. Like, what the hell is that? He's a fine center fielder. You put him in left field, and he's like,
He's looked a little inexperienced, certainly.
Who is our terrible left fielder out there?
Raul Ibanez?
No.
That's
Randy
fun.
Wynn?
That's fun.
Recently.
Al Martin? Butch Husky?
Oh, my God.
I got a laundry list of them.
Recently.
Justin Ruggiano?
Domingo Santana.
Kristen
Maybe that's what I'm going for. That was the first. I might be going for Domingo. Domingo was painful. It was painful
Domingo
to watch him play.
Domingo actively made you wonder how that was a choice that you made.
Yes. So athletic. And yet. So I get some severe Domingo Santana PTSD type vibes from watching Jake Fraley in left field. I don't know why.
Is that just from the one play where it was pretty catastrophic? Because, I mean, I saw Raul Banez hit his foot with a baseball trying to throw it to second base. Mean,
we still have a category on lookoutlanding.com called Raul Ibanez Takes Pride in His Defense. And if you have never looked it up, when you go to lookoutlanding.com right now, hold your thing over categories and look at that. Just look at that grouping of GIFs. It is just the best thing, not the best thing Jeff Sullivan did necessarily, but man, it is good. Like,
no, it is not based on that. It's based on that game he had in Chicago where he got tangled. My mental image of him,
it is rough, didn't that actually like happen. The third thing but that it's comes him up being like
swallowed by the ivy, like a horror movie or something, like the ivy monster coming out and getting him.
I don't know that ivy. I wouldn't say is indicative of his ability in left field. It's his ability to get out of tough situations.
I would say that is the thing that I'm most concerned about with Frehley, because I like him at the plate a lot. I think he has enough power to be like a double digit home run guy and have like a, you know, average ISO, maybe even a tick above average, just because he runs pretty well. He's been hurt a lot, and it is, you know, injuries are luck based to a degree, but it is also, you know, is it a Michael Saunders situation where things that might not injure the average person lead to an injury for him?
Magnet. He has a disaster magnet. Yeah,
like, you know, it's...
Don't
you know,
get me started on Saunders. Right. Oh, man.
You know, and so, like, that's what I worry about with Frehley, where it's like, this is clearly a profile. Like, it is a reasonable power, good, reasonable play discipline, good speed, should be a reasonable outfielder defensively at every position. But, you know, that's a profile that should work.
It's just so like sad that, like...
And I worry that is not going to get there for him because he had the ankle injury last year. He had the wrist injury, which was... You know, or the thumb, yeah. Thumb injury where he collided with Malik Smith. You know, I mean, that's fluky stuff. You know, and he's by all accounts well-liked. He's got a good work ethic. He's, you know, the Mariners have encouraged his sort of mentality in terms of how he's adjusted his swing.
Yeah, you know who else had a smart mentality about hitting? Mitch Haniger. Clearly, thinking makes you hurt.
In fairness, he did hit a baseball into his own nuts. Like, that's not so much... Like, that's...
Mitch Haniger...
the brain doesn't have too much to do with that.
He hit a ball into his own nuts. He got hit in the face with a baseball.
Yeah.
I mean...
like. Yeah.
It's not like James Paxton or... Was it Paxton who got caught in a pitching net? Like...
Yes, that's that happened. Level. And remember when Paxton hurt himself doing a push-up? Fell on his...
Yeah, like, see, there's a spectrum here. And getting a foul ball in the nuts is towards the bottom.
I just feel like this is the baseball gods deliberately trying to keep the game full of boring, stupid players. They're like, oh, a sliver of intellectualism, can't have that. Kaboom!
Oh, God.
So, I want to talk about Cal Raleigh, though.
Yes.
Or unless you want to finish up on Frehley,
I'll say, I think Frehley should be, I don't know. I don't know that Frehley is, I think Frehley's, ideally, he's like a very good fourth outfielder for the next team. But it really bums me out that I think he is one of the biggest losers of this time off. Because
absolutely.
He was going to be the opening day starting probably right fielder, you know, whatever it was going to be. And he's not going to be now. And yes, you know, he can just be in AAA, but like he's going to be 25 this year. And he needed time to, you know, sink or swim, and he's not going to have that same opportunity. And, you know, Kelnick's coming, Julio's coming. You know, there's
a wave of outfield prospects
So if his obligation is to beat out Kyle Lewis, like, and that's sort of his only sort of spot, you know, like he can probably, I mean, obviously we ranked him ahead of Braden Bishop because we think he's got more potential because, you know, sort of that Shenton Rizzo thing, like power makes a huge difference. I worry that the opportunity isn't going to be there for him and that that's going to hurt him a lot. And yeah, I think Raleigh is going to be one of the two catchers for the next 6 to 8 years, I hope. And that should be fine. I don't think he's going to be a star, but I think he'll be, I think he'll hit for good power. I think he'll be a good leader. And if he's improves defensively, that's great. But I think Fraley's missing out on an opportunity right here that I don't know that he's going to get again.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Cal Raleigh instead.
Hit me.
because I think he is going. Let me climb up on my hot takes box. Let me fire up the hot takes mobile. Mm-hmm. I think Cal Raleigh will be a star.
Heyo.
But I think that that's because the bar for being a star as a catcher is kind of low. I was looking at the wins above average posted by catchers last year. Obviously, we know Seattle led with 1.9, tied with Philadelphia and Minnesota. Again, Mitch Garver, the genius of Tanner Swanson right there. And then it's like Cleveland 1.7, Houston 1.5, you drop down to New York, Arizona, and then we're below 1. And then by the time we hit 12 on the list, which is Atlanta, we're into the negative numbers. So it's a real rough time for the catching position. And I think that the arrival of Joey Bart and Shea Langeliers and some of the other, like, really kind of...
Adelaide Rutschman's on the horizon.
Rutschman. Oh, my God, how did I forget Rutschman? Ugh.
I know, newer.
But... Slap me in the face with a beaver tail. So... who's the other one? Campusano.
That's why I have one here at my desk.
I mean, I assumed you did. I think that the catching position is, and obviously it's difficult for catchers to work out there, but I think teams have gotten really smart about going away from high school catchers. Sorry to Drew Romo and who's the other one? The other top tier catcher.
Soderstrom.
Thank you. I think that they've gotten smart about, okay, we have to draft college catchers. This is the skill set we're looking for. And I think that the position is about, I don't see all of those guys busting. Like, I think the position is about to have a really fun infusion, but currently, and Raleigh is kind of on the forward slope of those guys. I don't think it'll be that hard for him to be a pretty good catcher just because the bar is so low.
To feed sort of, right into sort of our final question or two here. Obviously Raleigh sort of has the best pathway to consistent work of any of these guys, right? You know, if you can catch and hit, you're going to, you know, you're going to move up a system. In this group, you know, from Shenton through the relievers, Bishop, you know, and our starters and the last two guys. Is there anyone in this group that you could see a year from now, you know, assuming we get at least like half a season of baseball, we get some graduations, who could be maybe not the top prospect in the system, but one of the top prospects of the system? Just because it'd be very hard to see someone other than Julio Rodriguez being at the top of the prospect list. But, you know, who I guess, do you think has the chance to make the biggest leap in a single season here?
I think my vote would probably be Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he just needs to be identified, you know. And the thing is, you're not going to ever rank someone like Fletcher or, I mean, maybe Carlson, but you're not going to rank a reliever this high. So if Sam Carlson can find a way to put in a bunch of innings, it's possible. But if Cal Raleigh goes out and he hits 25 more home runs at AA, he posts a batting average between 260 and 270 and shows you know, some sort of affinity to play the catcher position and throw runners out, it's going to be hard for him to go in another entire season without being recognized for mm-hmm. the player that he is behind the plate. It's really befuddling that he's... I'm not quite as high on him as Kate is. I wouldn't put him in the top five or six catchers in baseball, but he certainly would be in the top... catcher prospects in baseball. I think he's a top 10 or 12 prospect in the game at the position. It's just a weak position.
Mm-hmm. Kate, what about you? Would you say Raleigh as well?
I mean, yes, but for the sake of conversational diversity, I think 110 has got a lot of... If the 97 thing is for real, I think there's a lot of industry buzz around him. And again, the thing that might, you know, hurt Raleigh a little bit is just by the time people realize what he is, I think there's a good chance he's in the majors already. Hmm. So there's a small window. There's already a small window on picking up on a college prospect, right? Like, you kind of have to throw your lot in early and start talking about them. Or you run the risk of them just, you know, by the time you start writing about them, they're already in the majors. And I think that we're going to start to see that with Raleigh because he's getting close. So I think as far as, like, somebody who could be on prospect lists for a while, who could attract some attention and do some really exciting things as well, I think 10 would be my vote for that.
Yeah.
Maybe Carlson. If he comes back and is just, like, dealing gas. But I think that they're going to slow play Carlson.
Yeah, I don't think the context will allow for... Because I think that was what I was trying to think about. Was, like, it could be Carlson. I suppose it could be Campbell. Like, if he literally has a Logan Gilbert-like start, you know, where it's just like, oh, he's way better than, you know, low A. Oh, he's way better than high A. Oh, he's, like, very good in double A. Like, you know, then you're like, okay, this guy who was really good in college just continues to be really good. But
again, and Logan Gilbert has gotten some off-season love, and, like, mm-hmm. but in national, I mean, in top 100 lists, I think he's still way too low.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in our top 10 just because I think of what he did and the system and everything. But as far as, like, is he going to, would he get attention on a big scale? I don't think there's time for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're both right.
People too busy out here watching Jason Dominguez on dusty backfields in the DR.
Okay, but Jason Dominguez is built like Godzilla.
I know.
So
what is he? The alien? The drone?
The Martian.
The Martian. That's it. It's the other one.
Pretty
good.
It's pretty
good. It's a good nickname.
Yeah.
It's a very good nickname.
Hey, Beef Boy's not bad either. No,
Beef Boy is very solid.
All right, well... Thank you guys for taking some time to talk about the batch of guys we have on this list here. We've made it to the top 10. So next week we'll be getting into that top 10, which I'm pretty excited about. There are a few people in those groups. We may even break it down just by fives. Because there's just a lot I want to talk to you guys about with a few of these players. So
yeah, we're getting into the part of the list where, like, we have, and I noticed this while we were doing them, as we were doing the write-ups went from, like, who can take, so, like, we were, you know, laboring a little.
Can you get a paragraph?
Okay, you get to have so-and-so, so I get so... Like, arguing over who got to take the blurb. So, just a lot of excitement from our end on talking about these guys.
Yes.
Which hopefully will translate to an exciting listening experience.
Just even for that, one answer... Who is the person you're most excited to talk about? It doesn't mean you're, like, they're your favorite person, but, like, who is your favorite, the person you're most excited to talk about in the top 10?
I was really excited to talk about Cal Raleigh. I'm gonna have to think really hard about who.
Joe, do you have an answer on hand?
It's so hard not to say Kelenic because he's so polarizing, and there's so many different edges of that guy mm-hmm. that need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. So I guess he'd be off the tip of my tongue.
Absolutely. Kate, I'm curious to hear. Curious to hear you talk, and Joe, I'm curious to hear sort of your take and what you've heard as well on Brandon Williams. And that's definitely the person who I'm most intrigued to talk about, because I think we've seen the least of him in a sense, we've obviously gotten a chance to see little bits and pieces and hear little bits and pieces, but I don't think he's gotten quite the same amount of exposure for the average fan. So I'm excited to dig into that with you guys.
He's a good one.
It was pretty fun to send you guys that video of watching his bullpen and just have both of you collectively freak out over it.
No, it was fun.
Just as proof that he exists.
That's the big part, right? Like, you barely see these guys when they
get
drafted.
Which is one of the big pleasures of spring training, is like seeing a human being inhabiting a jersey that, like, and you read the name on the back and you're like, oh my God, it's so and so. You know, when you see them for the first time. I can recognize, this is so sad, I can recognize Jordan Callen from like 100 feet away. I'm like,
did you grow up in Kent?
Callen. No, it's just, you know, when you've been watching them for long enough, it's like, you're like, oh,
did he shave?
I know who that is. No, it's just, you know, little from watching them over and over again, but it's so exciting to see a guy and you're like, what's that? And then it's someone you haven't seen, like a guy from the DSL or whatever.
Nathaniel Garavitos.
I'm sorry, I'm still processing. Oh, yeah, he's, woo, boy. Yeah, it's like you get to learn about fun stuff like Garavitos, who's out there pumping triple digits with no control. And, you know, it's really exciting.
We can have a Johan Ramirez, too.
I'm sorry, I'm still mourning my... spring training trip. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I will say, I love talking about things that I know a lot about, and that's the Cal Raleigh. Like, I've positioned myself as a Cal Raleigh expert, so I'm excited
foremost
to talk about...
expert in the Cal Raleigh field.
I claim this knowledge panel. I am excited to talk about Logan Gilbert for the same reason, just because I have been studying him for such a long time. Yes. I think I know his arsenal really well. I'm so excited about him. I get very angry about how I think he's being undervalued kind of by the industry overall. And I'm excited to shout about Logan Gilbert.
Well, I am excited to do that with y'all.
Wait, who are you excited to talk?
Oh, Brandon Williamson.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I can't believe none of us said Julio. Why did none of us say Julio?
I mean, I think it's kind of a given, right?
That drum is just continuously being beaten.
Yeah, like, well, you know, it's sort of the new shiny thing in a sense. Mm-hmm. Like, we are, I think we've properly beaten that drum, so now there's sort of a constant reverb of that everywhere.
Yeah, now that all the Nationals, now that MILB account is, like, tweeting stuff, like... It almost feels a little like he doesn't belong to us as much anymore. This is a new weird... I mean, whatever. We'll get into this on the next pod, but this is a very weird thing. I'm like, but that's ours. You can't talk about that's ours. Mm-hmm. Or like, it's gone from... It's cool to see other people so excited about him and hopping on the Julio bandwagon to like... but that's our thing. Go away.
Well, yeah. What are prospect writers if not... sort of baseball hipsters.
I guess so. That's why I like prospecting so much. I've always wanted to be cool.
Exactly. Well, if there's one thing we've determined, it's that we are all three of us,
very cool.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So. Thank you all for listening to us three cool folks talk about
cool folks talking prospects. Exactly. Why didn't we name the pod that?
That's true. That's on me. I appreciate everyone who listens, downloads, subscribes.
Especially in this time, because I don't know exactly what's happening, what's going to happen going forward. Obviously, we're seeing industries shutter.
Right.
Hopefully the world of online sports content is okay for a while, but also, like, without sports to talk about, we are kind of... definitely in a little bit of a holding pattern. So please know that every time you download the podcast, it helps us. Every time you listen to it, every time you share it with someone, subscribe, that helps us so much right now. And it is we appreciate it all the time, but especially in these times of uncertainty. Yeah. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for sharing. Please continue to do so.
Yeah. All right. Well, hope you're all staying safe, staying sane, and staying healthy. And we'll be back with you guys next week to break into the top 10. Until then, go Mariners.
Bye! Wow.